Blessings of the Triple Gem, Theruvan Saranai. We are continuing with our series on the profitable perceptions based on the Buddha's teaching in the Duttiyasanya Sutta. This is Anguttara Nikaya chapter 7, discourse number 49, and also Raga Payala. This is Anguttara Nikaya chapter 7, 615 to 1124. Today's Dhamma session is on the perception of non-delight or dissatisfaction in the entire world, in Pali, Sabbaloke Anabirata-sanya. Let's begin by paying homage to the Triple Gem. We can bow our heads in Anjali. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dhamma, and homage to the Noble Sangha. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. As we highlighted in our introductory session, part one, we will examine each of the profitable perceptions, and this is to clarify the Buddha's instructions and their meaning, and also to understand what they overcome and how to develop each one, referencing other teachings of the Buddha when needed. And in the final session, we will consolidate them so we can contemplate all seven as a single meditation. And we're doing this because there is deep Dhamma within each profitable perception that we need to examine, understand, and penetrate with right view. And it's also important as we go through to see how these profitable perceptions build on each other, chipping away at what we have misapprehended or have been deceived by. As we have already seen, from developing and cultivating the earlier profitable perceptions, there is also a high degree of giving up or abandoning of unwholesome or unprofitable perceptions as we lean more strongly towards Nibbana. As the Buddha has said in the Duttiyasanya Sutta, bhikkhus, these seven perceptions, when developed and cultivated, are of great fruit and benefit, culminating in the deathless, having the deathless as their consummation. In the Raga Payala, which is in chapter 6 or chapter 7 of the Anguttara Nikaya, these abbreviated texts at the end of chapter 7 are about developing these seven things that help us to gain direct knowledge of lust or greed and more. So far, starting from the end of last year, we've examined the perception of unattractiveness, so this is asubhasanya, the perception of death, maranasanya, and the perception of repulsiveness of food, ahare patikulasanya. In this session, we'll be focusing on the perception of non-delight in the entire world, which helps the mind to shrink away from the world's beautiful things. In Pali, Sabbaloke Anabirata-sanya, where Anabirata-sanya can be translated as the perception of non-delight, as in not taking delight, also not indulging in or not fond of, or not content or satisfied with. And Sabbaloke can be translated as all the world, every world, or the entire world. When the Buddha talks about all the world, he means the world we construct with our sense spaces and sense objects, and so sense consciousness arises. The meeting of these three is contact, and with contact as condition, feeling comes to be, with feeling as condition, craving, with craving as condition, clinging, with clinging as condition, existence, and with existence as condition, birth, with birth as condition, aging and death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, sadness, and despair come to be. And this is what the Buddha refers to as the origin of the world in the Loka Sutta, Samyutta Nikaya, chapter 12, discourse number 44. Now, why do we need to develop this profitable perception? If we are deceived by the world's beautiful things, then we would continue to go out with our sense faculties, not seeing the danger. Instead, we would take delight, become attached, and expect happiness. And so we need the Buddha's instructions in order to correct this corruption in our view, in our perception, in our thinking, and what is taking us down the wrong path. It's important to see that we came to this current birth having taken delight in the world's beautiful things, misapprehending them, and following the wrong path. If we don't correct our perceptions of the world and develop the profitable perception as instructed by the Buddha, then we will remain bound to samsara due to ignorance and craving associated with those beautiful worldly things. This means we can expect no end to this whole mess of suffering. Let's now deep dive into what the Buddha has said about the perception of non-delight in the entire world in the Duttiyasanya Sutta. It was said, the perception of non-delight in the entire world, bhikkhus, when developed and cultivated, is of great fruit and benefit, culminating in the deathless, having deathless as its consummation. For what reason was this said? When a bhikkhu often dwells with a mind accustomed to the perception of non-delight in the entire world, his mind shrinks away from the world's beautiful things, turns back from them, rolls away from them, and is not drawn toward them, and either equanimity or revulsion becomes settled in him, just as a cock's feather or a strip of sinew thrown into a fire shrinks away from it, turns back from it, rolls away from it, and is not drawn toward it. So it is in regard to the world's beautiful things when a bhikkhu often dwells with a mind accustomed to the perception of non-delight in the entire world. The first thing to do is to admit that this profitable perception of non-delight in the entire world is not how we usually perceive the shiny or beautiful things in the world. Instead, we gravitate towards them rather than turning back or rolling away, and we are drawn towards them. Instead of equanimity or revulsion, we usually dwell taking delight, enjoying those things, finding gratification because we expect pleasure or happiness from those things, which means we haven't seen any danger or that it will result in dukkha. And we make plans as to how we can get more pleasure. So, for example, we might have a job that gives us pleasure, and then we see someone in our field appearing to derive more pleasure from a promotion or working for a different company. So we make plans in that direction, thinking that if we get promoted or go and work for a different company, then we'll find more happiness. Our mind is constructing that as a good idea. So essentially, we are continually constructing our world in this way. It could be if I study this, if I network with these people, if I marry this kind of person, if I invest in these things, if I save this much, if I travel to this place, if I eat this kind of food, if I buy this particular object, and so on. What we forget is the truth about what all of these things are based on: material objects, forms. So all the feeling we experience and expect to experience is based on these material objects and forms. Now think about the previous three profitable perceptions we have already contemplated. So unattractiveness, death, and repulsiveness of food. So there's the kicker already. And we will come back to this as part of deepening our contemplation as we go along. The point is, if we never develop the perception of non-delight in the entire world, then our mind is constantly distracted and troubled by the world's beautiful things, and we would not see the danger in them and how they keep us bound to suffering. So the key point the Buddha has made is to reinforce the development of the perception of non-delight in the entire world, so that our mind shrinks away from the world's beautiful things, similar to the simile of the cock's feather or a strip of sinew thrown into a fire. And as a result, we would be able to develop equanimity or revulsion towards those things in the world, helping us to lean towards Nibbana. So, how do we develop and cultivate the perception of non-delight in the entire world? Let's first look at the Girimananda Sutta. This is in Anguttara Nikaya, chapter 10, discourse number 60. This is the discourse where Venerable Ananda advised the Buddha that Venerable Girimananda was gravely ill. The Buddha advised Venerable Ananda if he were to visit and speak to Venerable Girimananda about 10 perceptions, that it is possible on hearing about them, Venerable Girimananda, his affliction would immediately subside. So the eighth, excuse me, perception of the 10 perceptions in this Girimananda Sutta is the perception of non-delight in the entire world. Now, in this sutta, the Buddha gave the following explanation to Venerable Ananda, which can help us. And what, Ananda, is the perception of non-delight in the entire world? Here, a bhikkhu refrains from any engagement and clinging to mental standpoints, adherences, and underlying tendencies in regard to the world, abandoning them without clinging to them. This is called the perception of non-delight in the entire world. In Pali, this is ye loke upadana cetaso adhitana abhinivesa anusaya te pajahanto viharati anupadiyanto. So there are three key things the Buddha has highlighted in his explanation to Venerable Ananda. The first is cetaso adhitana, These are the mental standpoints. We have previously translated adhidhana as determinations, also resolutions or decisions. In simple terms, these are the worldly things we are standing on, what makes up our worldly determinations or resolutions. And then the second one is abhinivesa. These are the adherences, sometimes referred to as the glue. We have previously translated abhinivesa as our inclinations. In simple terms, this is what we incline towards, having made our worldly standpoints or determinations. And we measure our performance, success, or happiness in the world based on this. And then lastly, or thirdly, is anusaya. These are the underlying tendencies. Anusaya can also be translated as proclivity, dormant disposition, or what lies latent in feeling. So let's now examine these a little more so we can correctly develop this profitable perception of non-delight in the entire world. First, let's look at mental standpoints and adherences. So cetasu adhidhana abhinivesa. We've previously also referred to them as worldly determinations and inclinations in our session, Understanding the Worldly Path and the Buddha's Noble Path, which examined the Buddha's teaching in the Katha Sutta, which is Anguttara Nikaya, Chapter 6, Discourse Number 52. On that occasion, Brahman Janusoni questioned the Buddha about the wish, quest, mental standpoints, adherences, and final goal of different groups of people. So, if we focus on just the mental standpoints and adherences in this table for this session, we can see that for the ruling class, their mental standpoint or determination is power, and their adherence or inclination is territory or land. And then for Brahmins, their mental standpoint is their chants or mantras, and their adherence is sacrifices. And then for householders, their mental standpoint is their skill or qualifications, and their adherence is their work, also their job or business. And for women, their mental standpoint is their sons, and their adherence is to be without a rival. And then for thieves, their mental standpoint is their craft or it's their ability to steal, and their adherence is darkness. And for ascetics, their mental standpoint is their virtuous behavior, and their adherence is nothingness or not being attached to any possession. Now, when we hold to these kinds of mental standpoints and adherences, we are conditioned and compelled by the world and the worldly yardstick. If this is the case, then it naturally flows that. Then it naturally follows that we take delight in the world, we expect gratification from the world, but unfortunately, we don't see the danger in the world. And this is our sensory world. We continually make plans and further shackle ourselves so that we can't see the truth of how it actually is, that it can only result in suffering, dukkha. For most of us, we've been conditioned from young that studying or training is important in order to acquire profession, skill, or trade. We continue on that pathway with higher study towards qualifications, memberships or affiliations, or work experience. Then we become glued to our jobs, careers, or our business. We strongly identify with me and my skill or qualifications, me and my job or position. Our point of reference and how we connect with others always comes down to what is your skill? Where do you work? What do you do? But this is not the only worldly standpoint and adherence we have. For example, we can take on roles such as parent, teacher, leader, friend, and more. Each role brings another mental standpoint and adherence. It's good to really delve into what we're really standing on, to ask that question. And then, what is the glue that is binding us to those things, and how we derive pleasure? And to acknowledge we hold on to these things for happiness, pleasure, and the expectation of future happiness or pleasure. What we'll find when we delve deeper is how strongly we can identify with our mental standpoints and adherences, how we construct and sustain this life based on those things, how attached we are, how our sense of self is intertwined with those things, how we measure ourselves and each other on those things, and what we do to please others in the world, how we think we are in control, and how we expect these things to last. But the truth is, we are very vested in the feeling that is dependent on those things, and we construct our lives taking delight in the world based on the value we assign to that feeling. And then we come to the underlying tendencies or anosaya. As we said earlier, this can be the dormant disposition or tendency, something that lies latent in the feeling. We've touched on this before when we examined the Paliticani Sutta and also the Pahana Sutta. So for this session, let's refer to the Caccaka Sutta, which is Majjhima Nikaya discourse number 148, where the Buddha has stated, "Bhikkhus, dependent on the eye and forms, eye consciousness arises. The meeting of the three is contact. With contact as condition, there arises feeling, felt as pleasant or painful, or neither painful nor pleasant. When one is touched by pleasant feeling, if one delights in it, welcomes it, and remains holding to it, then the underlying tendency to lust, and in Pali this is raga anusaya, lies within one. When one is touched by a painful feeling, if one sorrows, grieves, and laments, weeps, beating one's breast, and becomes distraught, then the underlying tendency to aversion, patiga anusaya, lies within one. When one is touched by neither painful nor pleasant feeling, if one does not understand as it actually is the origination, the disappearance, the gratification, the danger, and the escape in regard to that feeling, then the underlying tendency to ignorance, and this is avijja anusaya, lies within one. Bhikkhus, that one shall here and now make an end of suffering without abandoning the underlying tendency to lust for pleasant feeling, without abolishing the underlying tendency to aversion towards painful feeling, without extirpating the underlying tendency to ignorance in regard to neither painful nor pleasant feeling, without abandoning ignorance and arousing true knowledge, this is impossible. And the Buddha repeats the same for ear and sounds, nose and odors, tongue and flavors, body and tangibles, mind and mind objects. So what we need to understand from what the Buddha is saying is that we cannot make an end of suffering if we don't abandon the underlying tendencies that lie latent in pleasant, painful, and neither painful nor pleasant feeling. To abandon those underlying tendencies, we need to understand how we go wrong in relation to our attachment to feeling. Say, for example, we have experienced certain things in the past, such as eating different foods, doing certain kinds of work, getting told off, receiving praise, receiving a notice in the mail, losing a loved one, whatever the experience is. And as a result, we're happy, sad, or indifferent. Then the underlying tendency to lust, to aversion, or to ignorance is what lies dormant, connected with those feelings. Each time we have an experience that results in some kind of feeling, we awaken those underlying tendencies. And it's important to see these underlying tendencies are like pathways or perhaps deep-seated tendencies we have performed before that are intrinsically linked to our misapprehension of feeling. As such, they are linked with the wrong path, not the right one. When we continue to seek delight in the world, there is a desire to reconstruct the feeling that we have experienced before. And this process is connected with what keeps us coming back to samsara, following the path of greed, hate, and delusion. And this is what is preventing us from attaining nibbana. So what this points to is the importance of thoroughly contemplating feeling and to remember that dependent on the six sense bases and six sense objects, the six sense consciousness arises and the meeting of the three is contact. With contact as condition, there arises a feeling felt as pleasant or painful or neither painful nor pleasant. So the feeling that arises is dependently originated from this sensory world we construct. Now, if we recall our meditation on greed, hatred, and delusion, where we looked at object, sense, contact, and feeling, what we learned was that whatever object we take, whether it is agreeable, disagreeable, or neither agreeable nor disagreeable, then the sense contact is felt as pleasant, painful, or neither painful nor pleasant. Then the feeling we experience is pleasant, painful, or neither painful nor pleasant. And the result is all painful, as in painfulness in change, painfulness in pain, and painfulness in construction. Like the Buddha simile in the simile of the flayed cow in the Puttamansa Sutta, if she stands exposed to a wall, the creatures dwelling in the wall would nibble at her. If she stands exposed to a tree, the creatures dwelling in the tree would nibble at her. If she stands exposed to water, the creatures dwelling in the water would nibble at her. If she stands exposed in the open air, the creatures dwelling in the open air would nibble at her. Whatever that flayed cow stands exposed to, the creatures dwelling there would nibble at her. So no matter where the cow stands, she experiences pain and suffering. So we need to remind ourselves that this is the same predicament that we all face. No matter what object we take, the contact that is felt, the feeling that arises, all we can ultimately expect is pain and suffering. So if we take our own examples to see that, so one example could be in relation to a job. Now, down the first path, we're happy that we got the job. But pain arises when the novelty wears off and we have to actually do the work and deal with the challenges at work. So that's the painfulness in change. Down the second path, we may have to face a difficult boss or a colleague at work. Then that's painfulness in pain. Down the third path, we think, what if I apply for a transfer to another department and apply? And we do so, but we don't get the transfer. That's painfulness in construction. If we take another example about being a parent, down the first path, we're happy when our child enters the world, but then he or she falls sick. That's painfulness in change. Down the second path, we're worried about our child and their ongoing health issues despite medical treatment. Then that's painfulness in pain. Then down the third path, we find out about a new medical treatment that sounds promising and we're hopeful, but eventually it doesn't work out. So then there's painfulness in construction. And then one more example. Let's say about investments. Down the first path, the greed path, we believe in particular investments such as land, property, stocks, gold, Bitcoin, or a particular diversified portfolio. We're happy when our investments go up, but when it starts to decline, we experience painfulness in change. Down the second path, the hate path, we become worried about the poor performance of our investments, the down cycle. And certain conditions in the market, maybe government regulation, speculatory information, court cases, and so on. So we experience painfulness in pain. Then we decide to change our investment or the mix of our investment portfolio, having done some research. However, what we find maybe later on, the results are not as good as we hoped for. So then we experience painfulness in construction. So using our own examples is very important here because that's how we truly connect with what the Buddha is trying to explain to us in this Dhamma. When we think there is permanent pleasure in these things, no matter how we fix it, then we take them as me and mine and take it as lasting. But if we can really see that these three kinds of feelings all result in dukkha, no matter what we construct in our mind and how compelling we think it is, then we can give up any attachment to feeling and the underlying tendencies that lie latent and the dormant feelings and how they're dormant in those feelings. And we wouldn't take them as me and mine. It's also good to remember that these profitable perceptions are given as an insight pathway or jnanapatha. As we highlighted earlier, although we're learning them gradually one by one, they do in fact build on each other. So we began contemplating the perception of unattractiveness, this asubhasanya. We contemplated the 32 parts of the body and we applied the Buddhist simile of the boil. Now, in doing so, we started to see the true nature of the body as being unattractive or foul in nature rather than the corruption that it is attractive or beautiful. And then we looked at the perception of death, maranasanya, contemplating the dead body in various stages of death and decay, as in the nine charnel ground contemplation. It is not something we like to see, but something we need to see to understand the deathbound nature of the body. And then we looked at the perception of the repulsiveness of food, ahare patikulasanya, contemplating the true nature of food as foul and subject to decay. Now, when we come to the perception of non-delight in the world, we need to include these earlier profitable perceptions into our contemplation, because it means our baseline is not coming from a very low base. We're not starting from scratch. Instead, there is already some wisdom we have developed from these earlier profitable perceptions that will help us. In terms of the material things in the world that we may still take delight in, such as people, land, property, belongings, places, food, and so on, if we apply the earlier three profitable perceptions, then we see their true nature, that they are unattractive or foul in nature, subject to aging and decay, and deathbound in nature. So why are we still taking delight in them? And if we add that add to that our insight into feeling, then it begs the question, why are we still taking delight in these things in the world? So we need to realize that it's foolish because all we can expect is to suffer. When we have taken delight in the world, our sense world, we thought we could produce and sustain pleasure or happiness, but this is not the case. Whatever we construct leads to suffering and pain. If we deeply see that, then we would abandon any attachment to these material things and also see that the feeling that arises from any of these worldly things, so feeling due to form, that has deceived us. And whatever we construct, our volitional formations based on holding on to the feeling are fatally flawed. We just have to look at ourselves, how we came to this current birth to understand that. We were deceived and we fell for it. We fell for something that was false. We can also understand this through the Samadhi Bhavana Sutta. So we are conditioned by our former feelings and we want to reconstruct those feelings again or have better ones. If it could be feelings associated with relationships, our work, our investments, our status, our leisure activities, and more. It could be in relation to this current birth where we have a job, but we'd like a better one. Or could be in relation to a future birth, maybe in this one we're unattractive or poor or both. So in the next one, we want to be attractive and or wealthy. When we have the unprofitable perception of delight in the world, this is what links feeling to volition, and we make poor choices, unwise choices that lead us back to the wrong path. We forget about the foul nature, that we're subject to aging and decay, that we're bound to suffering, that we're death-bound, not permanent, unlasting, not to be taken as me and mine. In any case, with regard to feeling, what we do is we take delight, welcome or express, and remain holding. Abhinandati, abhivadati, ajusayatitati. This is how craving arises. If this is the case, then there is delight. With delight as condition, clinging comes to be. With clinging as condition, existence. With existence as condition, birth. With birth as condition, aging and death. With aging and death as condition, this whole mess of suffering. So every sensory experience we undertake, and if we believe that there is this feeling that arises, then what happens is we follow this insight pathway, which is dependent origination. And when we come to bhava, this existence, we keep putting money into the money box, believing that this is a good experience. It's worth it to experience it through the eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind. And as we said in previous sessions, what we're banking is, yes, at the point of death, with the breakup of the body, let me have another one. Let me have another tongue so I can taste. Let me have another eye so I can see. Let me have another nose so I can smell. Let me have another ear so I can hear. Let me have another body so I can experience all these sensations. And therefore, let me have the mind. So that is our predicament when we don't understand that all it leads to, having misapprehended pleasure, that's what we expected based on previous pleasure, but what we get is suffering, this whole mess of suffering. Now, if we have understood the deception of feeling and we start to develop the perception of non-delight in the world, then we won't take delight, we won't welcome or express, and we won't remain holding. So, nabhinandati, nabhivadati, najusayatitati. If that is the case, then craving ceases. So, with the cessation of craving comes a cessation of delight. With the cessation of delight comes a cessation of clinging, existence, birth, aging, and death, and the cessation of this whole mess of suffering. So, this is very powerful. Now, in contrast to these worldly standpoints or determinations, the Buddha taught four profitable determinations that support the Buddha's noble path. And we have examined these before in our session on the exposition of the elements based on the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta. Here, the Buddha has stated, one should not neglect wisdom, should preserve truth, should cultivate relinquishment, and should train for calm. The tides of conceiving do not sweep over one who stands upon these determinations. And when the tides of conceiving no longer sweep over them, one is called a sage who is calm. So these are what we need to develop in order to overcome greed, hatred, and delusion. And these are what will support us to develop the Noble Eightfold Path as the way out of this whole mess of suffering. Now, what underpins these determinations is the ability to overcome the four perversions, to see the foul nature instead of the attractive, to see the suffering nature instead of pleasure, to see the not self or not me and mine instead of self and taking things as me and mine, that nature, and also to see the impermanent nature instead of the permanent nature. So, if you recall the first part of the Dhatuvibhanga Sutta, what we needed to see, in particular the six elements, so earth, water, wind, heat, space, and consciousness, as they really are, and to recognize them as not me and mine. So, we did a whole meditation on that. And if we really see their troublesome nature, then we won't construct anything. We understand the arising and passing away of suffering. So, we make the highest determination for wisdom. We see that everything in the world is false and deceptive in nature, subject to aging, sickness, and death. So we don't want to construct anything with those qualities. Instead, we make the determination for truth that is unshakable. We discard whatever is false in the world because it has a deceptive nature, and we go towards what is not deceptive, and that is Nibbana. Having understood the noble truth of the origin of suffering, that craving is to be abandoned, we make the determination for relinquishment. So we abandon all acquisitions. We cut them off at the root, make them like a palm stump, do away with them so that they are no longer subject to future arising. And we make the determination for calm, to pacify lust, hate, and delusion. So this sutta meditation in the Dhatuvibhanga Sutta is very powerful as one skillful means to develop the perception of non-delight in the world. The other is a similar meditation we have also examined, and it's associated with the gatha or verse from the Chunda Sutta. And that's Okang Pahaya Aniketasari in English, having left home to roam without an abode, Game Akupang Muni Satebani. In the village, the sage is intimate with none. Kamehi Ritto Apure Karano. Rid of sensual pleasures without expectations, katang na vigaya janena karirati. They would not engage people in dispute. So, if you know either of those meditations, this can certainly help to develop the perception of non-delight in the world. Okay, so let's go back to the Duttiyasanya Sutta. And the Buddha then said, if when a bhikkhu often dwells with a mind accustomed to the perception of non-delight in the entire world, his mind inclines to the world's beautiful things, or if he does not turn away from them, he should understand, I have not developed the perception of non-delight in the entire world. There is no distinction between my earlier condition and my present one. I have not attained the fruit of development. Thus, he clearly comprehends this. So, similar to the earlier perceptions, the Buddha has given us a method to check whether we have developed the perception of non-delight in the entire world correctly. Here he said, if we have done our meditation, contemplating the mental standpoints, adherences, and underlying tendencies, and how we need to abandon them without clinging, we can also incorporate the earlier three perceptions to help us along. And if our mind still inclines to the world's beautiful things or doesn't turn away from it, then what we should understand is that we haven't developed the perception of non-delight in the entire world correctly, or the way that we have contemplated or applied the Dhamma is wrong. And this is because there is no difference in the mind before and after our meditation or contemplation. So there is no fruit of development. If that is the case, then it's good to go back and review where we went wrong. Sometimes we haven't contemplated the earlier profitable perceptions with regard to material things, so we may still take delight in them, or we haven't thoroughly contemplated feeling based on those material things, the form, and we haven't seen the problem caused by holding on to feeling. Whatever feeling we experienced before doesn't match the feeling we are experiencing now. When we hold to the previous feeling, that is what is causing us problems now. So whatever the case may be, maybe other areas, it's important to correct any flaws in our contemplation because there can be no fruit of development if we allow the unprofitable perception to still be there. If this is the case, then we're still taking delight in the world. And this is a very important point when we meditate and develop the mind, to be able to diagnose the mind and our meditation and see if we've gone wrong. And then the Buddha has said, but if when he often dwells with a mind accustomed to the perception of non-delight in the entire world, his mind shrinks away from the world's beautiful things. And it goes on, and either equanimity or revulsion becomes settled in him. He should understand, I have developed the perception of non-delight in the entire world. There is a distinction between my earlier condition and my present one. I have attained the fruit of development. Thus, he clearly comprehends this. So, in contrast with what we said earlier, after contemplating, if we find the mind shrinks away from the world's beautiful things, are not drawn to it, and either equanimity or revulsion settles in us, then we can understand that we have developed the perception of non-delight in the entire world correctly, because there is a distinction between before and after our contemplation. And so there is fruit of development. Now, with all of us, we have our jobs, relationships, land, property, investments, and more. Before we have been swept away with delight in these things. But now we have more equanimity when we view them, having dealings with them, having to make decisions around them. Or we may indeed have revulsion towards them because we see the clear danger in strong desire or attachment. We may see that it is indeed unlasting, subject to change, suffering, and not worth taking as me and mine. Now, if we're able to develop and cultivate the perception of non-delight in the entire world thoroughly, without veering away from it, remaining very mindful and vigilant, it has wisdom or insight. So the mind can really expand and become very vast. And this becomes very apparent. Often, with our earlier condition, prior to developing the perception of non-delight in the entire world, we are still very conditioned towards taking delight in material things and the previous feeling that we experience with those things. And so the mind does not get expanded or vast as it lacks wisdom. But if we have attained fruit of development, then we're happy to know we have developed this well. When it was said, the perception of non-delight in the entire world, because when developed and cultivated, is of great fruit and benefit, culminating in the deathless, having deathless as its consummation, it is because of that that this is said. It is because of this that this is said, this was said. And the Buddha has confirmed that when we develop and cultivate the perception of non-delight in the entire world, it is of great fruit and benefit because Nibbana is its final goal and accomplishment. As it says in the Asava, in the Asavakaya Sutta, it will lead to the destruction of the taints. And why has the Buddha said this? As we highlighted earlier, when we have developed and cultivated this perception of non-delight in the entire world correctly, this means we don't want to construct any volitional formations out of attachment to these worldly material things, nor the feeling that arises from them. We don't give value to our sensory experience. We have seen the true nature of all the things in the world as unattractive, subject to change, death-bound, unlasting, only leading to suffering and not worth taking as me and mine or self. Instead of seeing the world through the wrong lens of being a pleasure factory, we need to see it through the truthful lens as a pain or suffering factory. So there's this wonderful Gatha verse from the Nibbedita Sutta where the Buddha has said, Sankhapa rago purusa sakamo, a person's central pleasure is lustful intention. Nete kama yani citrani loke. They are not central pleasures, the pretty things in the world. Sankhapa rago purusa sakamo, a person's central pleasure is lustful intention. And then it says, Titanti citrani tateva loke, the pretty things remain just as they are in the world. Ateta. Dhira vinayanti chandanti, but the wise remove the desire for them. So, in this samsaric predicament, we must leave the world's beautiful things as they are. But what we remove is the craving or attachment to them through wisdom developed by understanding the Buddha's teachings, particularly about this perception of non-delight in the entire world. So, if there is any craving, we need to remember it can only result in birth, aging, and death, and this whole mess of suffering. But if we have developed this profitable perception of non-delight in the entire world thoroughly, then we understand that we don't want to have any craving or attachment to the world's beautiful things. We would shrink away from it, turn back from it, roll away from it, and not gravitate towards it. In other words, training towards not activating dependent origination. And with the breaking up of the body after death, if we are skilled at this particular profitable perception, we would be able to uplift our mind. So we do not incline towards constructing another birth. Instead, we incline towards the cessation of suffering because what we want is the deathless, Nibbana. So in the meditation, If we attain any liberation, any vimutti, then we have transcended both feeling and volitional formation. So we've now come to the end of our session on the fourth of the seven profitable perceptions, the perception of non-delight in the entire world, Sabbaloke Anapparatasanya. So let's express our gratitude to the Buddha for these wonderful teachings. Let's express gratitude to our other teachers, parents, and good friends who encourage us on this Noble Eightfold Path. And we can now share the merits with all sentient beings. May all beings be happy and well. May all beings be free from suffering. Blessings of the Triple Gem to all of you. Wishing you all well. Theruvan Saranai.